Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. My name is Doug Wortham, and I have the distinct pleasure of hosting today's show. Today is our annual Spring Preparedness Show, where we have a conversation with various agencies to hear how they are prepared to meet the best and worst Mother Nature can bring to the state of Minnesota. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. Now here's Major General Sean Mankey.
We refer to the days between the end of summer and the beginning of fall as 101 critical days of summer, and for good reason. The statistics show us that as the seasons change and the temperature rises, the number of injuries to our soldiers and airmen also tick upward. During these 101 days, car accidents, accidental drownings, and alcohol-related injuries are much more common than we would like. A relaxing day out on the lake, a cross-country summer road trip, each one of these scenarios offers an opportunity for injury if we are not careful. As you enjoy your well-earned downtime this summer, I ask you not to forget the importance of safety. A few simple actions on your part prevent bad things from happening. Helmets, seatbelts, and life vests don't work if you don't use them, so please use them. Please be safe and smart as you enjoy everything this warm weather has to offer.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said, this is our spring preparedness show, and we've got three separate agencies that we're going to spend some time with here. Each of them will have their own little session, and then we'll bring them all back together for the final session of the radio program. And so all are in the studio, and our first guest today is Jim Rand. Jim is the St. Paul District Readiness Operations Center Chief from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In this capacity, Jim serves as the leader for the St. Paul District to coordinate disaster response assistance to communities, stakeholders, and tribal partners across the upper Midwest. Jim, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. Privileged to be here.
Well, it's good to have you in the studio, and I think that it's important to have a conversation like this as we roll into spring and, of course, approach the summer. And, you know, it's been kind of an interesting year, a fantastic winter, depending on whether or not you're a snowmobile fan or not. But what does the flood look like? What does that season look like for us? How are we feeling?
Well, this year is an anomaly. It's been more mild than normal, and we don't have a significant snowpack in any of our four basins that make up the St. Paul District. So we're looking at a below normal spring flood event, and if we were to have a spring flood event, more than likely it would come from a heavy precipitation or a rain event at this point.
Now, you've been with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers since 2001 in your current position since June of 22. Have you ever seen this type of a season that we're experiencing right now?
No. Nope. I have never come across something like this.
And so I don't know. I mean, is that like a relief for you, or are you guys sitting there going, well, God, I guess we got nothing to plan for because we're not going to have to worry about anything?
Well, for St. Paul District itself, it's a double-edged sword. You're right in the fact that no spring flooding event is a positive. However, as we roll into our navigation season and potential drought conditions, there potentially could be impacts to our towing industry.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Just yesterday, my wife and I were driving, and she had made comment to me about how low almost every body of water we look at is right now. And I didn't even think about the impacts that could have on the water transport part of things.
Right. Yep. In St. Paul District, our navigation dams are that's what they are. They're navigation dams. They are not flood control. So they are designed to hold back water to maintain that 9-foot navigation channel. It's very low probability that any drought condition would get so extreme that we would close navigation. However, there could be potentials for groundings in critical sedimentation points in the channels. But
so as you said, though, I mean, it's kind of like the double-edged sword. I mean, you don't want to have a big influx of precipitation, but yet you need to have some.
Correct.
So you don't have those issues that you're referring to.
Correct.
Transportation.
Yep. And using that analogy, last year we had to stop navigation because we were in such high water for so long.
And is the risk there, I mean, it obviously it's high. Is that because now it's like fast moving and just very difficult to navigate, or what's the—
Correct. Yep. It's fast moving, difficult to navigate. And then when the river goes over its banks, you're looking at significant property damage with the displacement that a towboat pushes out.
All right. So it's not like you're not busy. You're still making plans, because that could be a concern. And, you know, so now you're going to have some contingencies there. And how do you warn people? How do you communicate that? Which actually leads into the next thing I want to talk to you about is, you know, we'll talk with all three of the agencies here today, and communication is extremely important. But the things that you're concerned with, how is it that you share that information and make sure it gets out to those that need it?
So starting in January of any year is really when we start looking at our spring flood forecast and the amount of snowpack that we have in our water basins. We start meeting with a lot of our local stakeholders, National Weather Service, NOAA, partners like that, and we start to plan ahead based on the information that we have that's on the ground. I'm going to use an acronym called SWE, Snow Water Equivalent. We closely monitor those snowpacks to see how much moisture is contained within them, and then we can adjust from there. We want to be able to control the inflows as best we can to prevent any flooding, basically a mitigation.
So working with those agencies, obviously important, communicating with them about what you're experiencing, what you're doing, extremely important. But when we talk about communities in general that might be at a risk of flood, what kind of tools or resources do you bring to the table for them?
So for community support, we do two things. We do technical assistance and direct assistance. We work closely with our state EM offices and down to our county EM offices as well as our tribal partners. And if they have an area of concern, whether it be a bridge abutment or maybe an older levee, we can send out our engineering staff to do an evaluation and provide a potential recommendation to mitigate any flood risk to that area.
So, you know, floods. In the next question that I have for you, obviously, you know, the threat of flooding is generally something we would experience. But you also manage some of the reservoirs around Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin. And so without having the amount of precipitation that we would normally have, you know, where those are in a position to gather that water, is there any other concerns that we might have for surrounding areas that could potentially have an overflow or a need for those reservoirs' use?
So the way that we use these reservoirs when it comes to mitigating spring flood is once we start to calculate and factor in that SWE, the amount that's in the water basin, that's that snow water equivalent I mentioned earlier, we have an operation manual that allows us to draw down those reservoirs to accept that inflow of that snow melt. And that's closely regulated with our hydrology department in coordination with National Weather Service and agencies like that. And then so we make capacity for that snow melt. And at this time, we just don't. It's only drawn down so far, and then it basically that makes the room to bring it back to elevation as the snow melts.
So we talk a lot about, obviously, it's the spring, it's flood season, but, you know, really, what is the mission or the main responsibility? Why do we need to have a U.S. Corps of Engineers, Army Engineers?
Well, the Corps itself is multifaceted. It's a big organization. My role in that as emergency manager is I help, you know, plan emergency response. And then we also do we plan, we respond to an emergency, and then we recover from that. And the entire time we're also working with our stakeholders, our partners, on mitigation efforts to lessen the impact to local communities as it comes to flood response.
And so it's not just floods, though. I'm sure you've got other missions and things that you've got going on inside of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Correct. As far as emergency response, we also support FEMA and an emergency support function in engineering and public works. Currently, we have staff deployed to Maui in support of the wildfires over there.
Okay.
There's a couple of different teams over there. We have a temp housing team. They're designing what's called a group site. This is large-scale modular home parks for those that are displaced. We also have several key players over there on the debris mission, helping to remove all that debris from the wildfires. And then we also provided support recently to Typhoon Mawar, and we still have an individual that's supporting that effort down there in Guam as well.
Well, you got a lot going on, and we'll hear a little bit more from you towards the end of the show here. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk to our next guest about spring preparedness. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We will be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I am your host, Doug Wortham. Our next guest in the studio is Christy Rollwagon. Christy is the director at the Minnesota Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Christy became the director in May of 2023 after serving for 13 years as the manager of emergency programs for the Metropolitan Airports Commission at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Christy, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for the warm welcome.
Yeah, so I imagine that, you know, Jim sitting to your left here in the studio, you're not strangers. You've worked with him before, and we'll talk a little bit about that relationship and how important it is. But, you know, this is a huge topic, right? I mean, every year we talk about spring preparedness, and there's always this concern about the flooding. Well, normally we have a bunch of snow on the ground right now, too. And, of course, we don't. So we've got a reprieve, right?
We have a reprieve, but it is very surreal out there. When you look at the landscape, I can't recall a winter. I agree with what was said earlier. I can't recall a winter where there's been so little snow and the temperatures have been so warm.
You know, we kind of celebrate the fact that, you know, I mean, shoot, just the other day I was outside with just a T-shirt on, you know, and here we are. It's middle of March. We're waiting for the hockey tournament snowfall to come that never came. Maybe it's the March Madness snowfall that's going to come. Who knows? But I have to imagine that when we have this little precipitation at this time of year, that there isn't just the great, we're not going to necessarily have floods, but there's got to be some concern about what's going to happen here in a few months down the road as we lead into summer. What are your thoughts about that?
You're absolutely correct. So lack of snowfall, even though it is a good thing, it does open up the door for other types of possible emergencies. So we're looking at probably ending back up into a drought situation again. I know we were involved quite heavily with the weekly planning meetings for drought, but also we're looking at things like the threat for wildland fire here in Minnesota, and that season has already begun, which is exceptionally early, up to 6 weeks early compared to what we've seen in years past.
Yeah, and Jim, you know, mentioned the fires in Maui, and then, you know, Texas has had some issues spreading into Oklahoma with fires. And, I mean, do you have some type of like a projection as you look out? I mean, are we in that dire straits right now, or is that the concern, or is that what you're planning for as being the worst case scenario?
So we work very closely with the DNR. They are the ones that lead the coordination through their Minnesota ICS team or the incident command team that runs out of Grand Rapids. They are the lead planning agency for this. We help them out in a support role. And when they explain their planning levels to us, the scale is 1 to 5. And just this week, yesterday, the entire state went to a planning level 3, which, you know, with 5 being the worst, we're inching our way towards looking at a worst-case scenario for us here in the state. It will all depend on the weather, and it will all depend on whether or not we get any precipitation and how fast things green up here. But we've already begun our planning coordination calls, and we will be hosting here as emergency management. We will be hosting a large planning effort next week with all of our stakeholders in the fire service, our utilities, and the DNR and other stakeholders, so that we are all on the same page. We all have the same messaging, and we're looking at contingency plans if we should need to look at additional resources coming into the state to assist.
As you're looking at those contingency plans, and you talked about, you know, kind of the grading scale, is there like a certain area where you see that there's more of a concern? You know, like, I mean, who should really be concerned right now, you know, as we look into the future?
That's a great question. You know, from my experience over the years dealing with wildland fire in the fire service and in emergency management, it seems like we seem to have issues with the western part of the state for a lot of reasons. It just seems to be a temperature difference out there. But also when weather systems move through, we seem to get a lot of the wind coming from the west, and the wind that really fans the flames of these wildfires, and southern Minnesota. Northern Minnesota, you know, in a traditional year, will have a snowpack that at times can last till May. And as you move through the lessening of that snowpack, you know, the southern part of the state goes first. And, you know, obviously the northern part takes a little bit longer. But this year, There's no snowpack anywhere. So I would say that I would be prepared anywhere in this state for the potential of wildfire.
Now, would you say that we can point the finger and blame our South Dakota brothers and sisters or North Dakota brothers and sisters and maybe even our Ouijans? But it looks like the Canadians are off the hook.
Well, I don't know about that, but I will tell you, it's really been an odd year. My son goes to school in Omaha, and they had more snow in Omaha than we've had in Minnesota. And in the Twin Cities in particular, it's almost like it's upside down.
Yeah, that is something. So, you know, we're talking about, flooding early on. We just talked about wildfires and kind of that risk. But when it comes to wildfires, though, what role does your agency, HCM, play when it relates to the wildfires? What do you bring to the fight, so to speak?
Sure. So the role of emergency management is to help with coordination, collaboration, and communication. We're kind of the conveners. We bring the stakeholders to the table if they're not already at the table. And in this case, you know, DNR is the lead agency for all things wildfire. But we will be there in a support role to make sure that, for example, when we look at all the stakeholders that are at the table, a great example of one that we just added to the mix for our planning meeting is our utilities. The Department of Commerce oversees utilities. Well, if you're in an area where you are now threatening the utilities and or high wind events is going to take out those utilities, then we've got a plan for the consequences of that. You know, people being without power, the possibility of there being no, you know, power to some critical vulnerable populations. So we bring together the agencies. We look at our emergency response plan for the state, in particular for wildland fire, but we also look at what any other exigent circumstances could bring, and we get ready to position ourselves to either assist and bring other state agencies into the mix. We will assist a local unit of government that is experiencing or a region that is experiencing the effects of wildland fire. And then if need be, bring in federal resources. And so we are kind of that middle person or that broker that would bring in federal resources to support not only response but recovery from wildland fire.
And so bringing all the groups together, the different stakeholders.
Correct.
It sounds a lot like you're just trying to be proactive, right? I mean, you need to get ahead of what could come and, you know, let's plan for the worst and pray for the best, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so a message to the general population, knowing that there could potentially be, we don't want to send people into a tizzy, but how could someone prepare for wildfires?
That's a great question. And I will point everyone to take a look at the Department of Natural Resources website. There's a program called FireWise in Minnesota. It's an excellent program. It's modeled after looking at where that wildland-urban interface is around your property, doing what you can to clear zones around your property if need be. Also, you know, to be very clear and aware of where you're allowed to have any kind of outdoor recreational fires or doing any burning right now, that recommendation is to not do anything right now.
Yeah.
So just being aware of that and just starting to think about how you reduce the risk around your home or around your property. And also at the same time, think about the preparedness and what can I do to be ready if I need to evacuate my home in a very short order. Do I have what I need with me? Do I have all my important papers in a go kit that I can grab and take with me? Am I prepared with medication to leave the house? Do I have the essentials that I need if we need to relocate at a moment's notice? And then just be ready to communicate that communication plan amongst your family members so that as maybe communications are diminished, you have an ability to check in with your family members and friends and loved ones, and they know how you're doing and you know how they're doing.
And I think the messaging here is, one, don't get freaked out. We're not telling you that it's coming, but you should always be prepared, whatever the situation, whether it was for, you know, a flood or a fire. It is useful to have that go kit, as you talk about. Just be prepared in case you got to leave on a moment's notice.
Yep, we call them bug-out bags.
Bug-out bag, yes. Very familiar with the terminology. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back. We'll talk to one of our other partners, and then we'll have Christy join us towards the end of the segment. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We will be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In a moment, we'll hear what the Minnesota National Guard is doing as it relates to spring preparedness. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Brad Lindsay.
Drive home your support for Minnesota military members, veterans, and their families by purchasing a Support Our Troops license plate for your car or motorcycle. To purchase these plates, visit your local DMV or visit MinnesotaVeteran.org for more information.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us in the studio is Major Matt Scholes. Major Scholes is the Minnesota National Guard current operations chief, where he oversees the domestic operations response efforts of the Minnesota National Guard. Major Scholes, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you in the studio and, you know, to be sitting here with a couple of people that I'm sure aren't strangers to you and to be discussing an important topic, and that is getting the residents of Minnesota prepared for what might be coming, but then also talking a little bit about how each of our agencies are preparing themselves to support the citizens of Minnesota. So let's get right after it then, and let's talk a little bit about the Minnesota National Guard and really, what does it mean to you from the Minnesota National Guard and how you're leading this preparedness for emergencies and contingencies?
So the way that we kind of look at things, the Minnesota National Guard, as well as any other military organization, focuses a lot on planning. So specifically as it relates to domestic operations, the Minnesota National Guard operates within the framework of the MEOP, which is the Minnesota Emergency Operations Plan, which is a product that HSCM actually developed. So Director Rollwagon and her team kind of work on that directly. It's a product that's signed by the governor of Minnesota and is supported by all the commissioners as kind of the overall framework for how we kind of gear ourselves as an organization, the Minnesota National Guard being a part of the MEOP. Within the MEOP and what the Minnesota National Guard specifically operates underneath is what's called O-Plan 500-1. So this is our specific document that outlines our support to civil authorities in an all-hazards environment. The O-Plan 500-1 includes concept plans or CON plans for each of the major domestic mission response types to include cyber attacks, flooding, severe weather, a nuclear power plant incident, wildfire, human pandemic, foreign animal disease, search and extraction, and other operations. The J-33 current operations section, in which I serve as the officer in charge, publishes annual guidance, which comes out annually, yearly, on floods, wildfires, and winter storm response specifically. We also publish annual operations guidance specifically to our National Guard Reaction Force units and civil disturbance response operations. This annual guidance specifies units and or facilities that perform specific functions within the response window. So the op order falls underneath the con plans, which fall underneath the op plan, is the way that we kind of look at things for the Minnesota National Guard. Very technical.
But. Yeah. I mean, that brings back memories here of stuff. And, I mean, obviously, you're planning for a bunch of different things at the same time. You always have to have a contingency plan in place because you just don't know what emergency is going to present itself, especially as we talk about Mother Nature, right? I mean,
correct.
We could have a wildfire and then all of a sudden flooding a few days later or something crazy like that. And so you're preparing for all of that kind of stuff. So, but as you are going through and kind of developing these plans, I'm assuming you don't develop the plan in a vacuum. So you've got to share our stakeholders together. You've got to share this information so that maybe you're syncing with other agencies to make sure that what you're seeing, they're seeing, vice versa?
Correct. So myself specifically as the J-33, I kind of am the upward-facing look. So I work very closely with Director Rollwagon and some of our other senior leaders within the other organizations within the state of Minnesota as well as the overall FEMA Region 5. Subordinate to myself, I have Sergeant First Class Timothy Martin, who's our interagency NCOIC, and he works directly with the regional program coordinators for each of the HSCM regions in Minnesota, so the six separate HSCM regions, as well as some of the different police departments, et cetera, in the metro area and surrounding state.
So is HSCM kind of your main partner, though, as it relates to these contingency operations?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And we've had a long-standing relationship with that agency, obviously. And so what's it like to have a relationship like that where, you know, because both of you, you know, you're relatively new in the position, right? Less than a year, you got to walk into something, but it's got to be a relief knowing that these relationships have been built over time. And so it doesn't matter that it's a new person. It's the agency themselves have a standing relationship.
That is correct. And there is a lot of overlap as far as personnel. So, for instance, there's some individuals over at HSCM currently that are there are currently M-Day soldiers within the Minnesota National Guard that work with me on the weekends during drill weekends, or previous full-time members of the Minnesota National Guard. So there's a lot of overlap between the organizations.
Yeah, so that's got to be pretty comfortable, too. I think one of the big things that we often talk about on the show is it's good to have the relationships built ahead of time, because you don't want to be exchanging business cards in the middle of a flood, for example. You already want to have those relationships built, so that's kind of neat. So let's talk about the support, though, that the Minnesota National Guard can bring, right? So if some other agency, you're working together and there's whatever that emergency is, what can the Minnesota National Guard do? Because it's not always Minnesota National Guard soldiers or airmen on the front lines. Really, it's about the resources you can bring to the table.
That is correct. So we're essentially a large force pool for the governor of Minnesota. So really what we have, every facility that the Minnesota National Guard maintains, every soldier, otherwise without medical type restrictions, things like that, is available to be activated to support our civilian counterparts. So kind of our main effort with that is we do have what's known as an NGRF, National Guard Reaction Force. So that's roughly 500 soldiers that are able to respond quickly within approximately 24 to 48 hours to any location within the state to support our emergency management partners in whatever they would need. That's kind of our first line of defense, as you could say, in a domestic environment, but also the rest of the 10,000 soldiers and airmen within the Minnesota National Guard are also available as required, just at a slower pace.
You know, we talked about, obviously this year being so crazy, and, who could have predicted, right? I mean, the Farmer's Almanac isn't always right, but, for your team, you put a lot of time and effort into planning for, let's just say, floods, right? Because that's what we're really talking about here. You put a lot of time and effort into planning for that. What kind of relief is that for you and your team, though, when, all right, we're probably not going to have to deploy anybody to take care of that or assist that?
It's a big relief. We still maintain situational awareness on what's going on. So our flood response window is generally from March through June of each year. So we do maintain situational awareness on what we're looking at as far as floods. This year, for floods, it's not obviously looking as busy. We're looking more at fire response this year. So normally our fire response window begins in April, but due to the kind of the threat picture right now, we're starting that early in March, as Director Wolwegen kind of alluded to, with HSCM is also looking at fire response earlier this year than what normally would be done.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is that's got to be the concern now is wildfire. And then, of course, you have aviation unit that could deploy with their baskets for the water. I forget what they're called, but so that they could deploy to help fight the fire if needed.
Correct. Yep. So those are called Bambi baskets. Bambi is what baskets. We kind of call those.
I was thinking Hesco, but I know it's not a Hesco.
So there's two versions of the Bambi bucket. There's a 530-gallon bucket that's used by the UH-60 Blackhawks, and also a 2,000-gallon bucket that the CH-47 Chinooks can actually carry and utilize. So our primary fire responding asset for the Minnesota National Guard is going to be our aviation assets, whether it's observation for the fire response or actually deploying those Bambi buckets to put out a fire.
So we talked obviously about flood. We talked about wildfire. What other unique type missions are you really planning for, worst case?
So our worst case would be our actual civil disturbance deployment, which would be kind of the worst case scenario for an actual activation for a mission. But we also have steady state. Our civil support team is a pretty regularly utilized steady state mission that go out and support different sporting events, different major concerts, et cetera, for chemical agent detection, those types of things. The worst case scenario for us would be a civil disturbance activation, which thankfully we haven't had for a couple of years.
Yeah, and so, I think it's interesting, right? So, it's not necessarily the full-time force. We talk about the Minnesota National Guard. You've got traditional soldiers and airmen, so the M-Day staff. And, in a time of need, that's what the branch of the military, the National Guard, is for, is to provide that local support inside of their communities, which is often one of the big draws for people to join the National Guard versus other branch of the military, because you can serve locally. And then for times of community support when it's needed, you can help support your community.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, what a great deal. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a break here, and then we'll come back. I'll bring the three of you all back in together. We'll have a little jam session for a couple of minutes and see what's coming up next. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and this has been our annual spring preparedness show and spending some time with Jim, Christy, and Major Scholes. And I'm going to bring you all back onto the radio again. And Christy, I want to start with you. You know, we talk a lot about the preparedness, you know, to get ready for an event. But you were saying during the break that, you know, everything starts locally. And so if there is a need somewhere in northern Minnesota, how does the help that you offer or our Minnesota National Guard offer, how does that even start?
So, yes, our mantra is always all disasters are local, all incidents are local. Each community has their own public safety force and, you know, their own public works, all of those different types of divisions and departments that support their community. When they are out of options is the best way to describe it, whether they have sought mutual aid from communities around them or they're just completely out of options, they will work through a system of notifications. They'll go to their county, and if their county can't support them, then at that point we will most likely get a phone call to the state, and that's typically done through our Minnesota Duty Officer. Our Minnesota Duty Officer programs what I call the 911 for 911ers.
Okay.
And that is kind of that tripping point where we know something is going on if we haven't, you know, gotten it from other indirect communication methods. At that point, then we work with that local unit of government, that local jurisdiction to determine where they're overwhelmed, what they're overwhelmed with, and how we can help resource the appropriate resource to get to that community to deal with what's going on. Sometimes it's resolved by just having some kind of a phone conference. At times it's deploying people and equipment to that region, just depending on the nature of the emergency. But that's typically how it works. It's very much bottom up. It's not top down.
And Major Scholes, so, you know, from the Minnesota National Guard's perspective, obviously there's a lot of resources, military equipment, personnel, but it's not like you just go over there, you know? I mean, how do we get you involved?
No, so generally the way that it would work, your county emergency manager, as Director Rawlwagon mentioned, would get a hold of HSCM via the State Duty Office. If the emergency was to a level where the HSCM determined we needed to deploy the National Guard to support, it would then go up to the governor's office. He would sign, he would vet it and then sign a governor's executive order, then tasking TAG, the Adjutant General, to deploy Minnesota National Guard in support of whatever the emergency is. So essentially the GEO would be published and then we would deploy to support.
And Jim, you know, from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, you know, how do you then fit into what was just described by Christy and Major Scholes?
Right. So once an event occurs, there's regular recurring meetings that we're invited to or participate in through planning efforts and collaboration. So we are closely monitoring the needs that the local governments and the state governments are executing. And we have staging areas throughout Wisconsin and Minnesota where we have pre-stage pumps, sandbags, airlift sandbags if the National Guard needs to deploy those with slings. So we're engaged. We may not be actively participating in the response, but we're engaged in the ongoing communication that's going on for situational awareness in case our needs are, our assets are needed.
And I think that's the key thing. And I'm not going to put words into your mouth, but I'm assuming that when HSEM gets a phone call, there's already been a heads up. I mean, you've got some parallel planning going on, so you know, hey, there could be a need coming. Let's start spinning the wheels here and get ready, because the last thing, or I think the worst thing we could do is when someone calls and says, I need your help right now, and then you're like, oh, we need, you know, 7 hours to make a plan. So so you always have that open communication, which is why it's important to have these relationships. Christy, I just want to end with you. We only have about 30 seconds here. Give us another rundown about how someone can be individually prepared.
So we really promote individual preparedness, family preparedness or household preparedness, and community preparedness. An individual preparedness effort would be something as simple as just making sure you have a communications plan amongst your loved ones, your family members, making sure that you know how to find someone in an emergency. There are a lot of new apps that you can put on your phone that help you with that these days. When I first started, we used to do a little card that you would carry in your wallet, you know, and that would be, you know, how you would remember how to call someone and make sure you had a dime when you could make a phone call for a dime attached to that card.
The good old days.
Yeah, exactly. But now, you know, it's about having that that awareness of how to communicate, and cell phones have made that so much easier, and apps. Also, making sure that you have a kit. You know, whether that you are looking at a flooding event, a fire event, a severe weather event, a winter hazard, you know, winter storm event, just making sure you have 72 hours worth of supplies, food and water for you and each one of your family members. We promote that 3-day readiness, because at times when we have catastrophic events, we might not be able to get responders into communities for 72 hours. And then finally, you know, have a plan, have a communications plan, but also be ready to go if we need you to leave, you know, and have that bug out bag we talked about earlier. There are great resources on ready.gov. There's individual family preparedness plans and communications plans that you can have. We translate that into a community effort as well. And, you know, if you don't want to put your own kit together, gosh, you can buy one now online. Yeah. It's amazing.
Well, all great great advice to give. And Jim, Christy, Major Scholes, just want to say thanks for coming in for our annual Spring Preparedness Show. And I really appreciate you spending time on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Joining us now is the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Lacaparral County Veteran Service Officer, Josh Benega. Josh, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good to be back on here, Doug, and it was good seeing you last week.
Yeah, it was great. You know, we got to visit for a little while, spent some time with you at the MDVA-sponsored spring conference that's put on for the County Veteran Service Officers. Great opportunity to get that network together, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's, you know, and I attend, I'm going to be attending both spring conferences that MDVA is putting on for us CVSOs. Last week we had ours in Bemidji for the colleagues that live and work up north, and then we're having one in Mankato here in a couple of weeks for those that live in the southern half of the state. Now you look at Minnesota, and you know it seems we're a small community, but really, you know, we're 400 miles from north to south, and we're about 200 miles east to west, and it just makes sense to have two different locations, so people don't have to travel a great amount to participate in training.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the content of the training, but before I do that, I just want to point out I had the opportunity when I was up there to visit the new Bemidji Veterans Home. Wow, what a sight that was! Just a fantastic facility.
I'm sure it was. I missed that tour, but you know, we got one here where I live over by Montevideo, which is about a half-hour drive, and it's amazing.
Yeah, they've done a great job on putting those together, a lot of thought going into design. But, yeah, so definitely people should check those out and get more information about them. But let's talk a little bit about these conferences. I mean, you know, it's an annual event. Obviously, like I said before, it's great to get the group together. You do some of that networking. But you have required continuing education units, and this satisfies a good portion of that, doesn't it?
It does. Annually, CVSOs have to maintain 16 hours of continuing education, and there's certain specific topics that we have to cover, and it's one is ethics, one is claims, one is pension, one is healthcare, and there's a few others that I'm missing. I know I am, but MDVA provides a lot of that training for us, and then we have other training opportunities throughout the year through MDVA's training team. MACVSO puts on our own conference in the fall up in the Brainerd area, and then MDVA puts one on, and then the National Association of County Veteran Service Officers puts on a training where if you attend that national training, all of your 16 hours of training are covered in the national training.
You know, it's important too, is that you know, the veterans out there, the family members know you are getting that continuing education, so they can rest assured that when they make that visit to the Lacaparral CVSO or any county for that matter, that they are going to be met with somebody who who knows what's going on, who's got, you know, the latest and greatest, so to speak, about training, and they understand the programs, the benefits. And if they don't know because they maybe haven't been in position for a long time, they at least know where to go. And I think that's important. Don't you agree?
I've always said, even when I started 14 years ago, if I don't know an answer, I'm going to find an answer, and I'm going to get back to you with that answer. And the, you know, some of those answers come easy. Some of them still don't. And, you know, if you're not learning every day, you're staying in place, and that's just not good in my eyes. So.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great note to end on right there is, you know, if you're not learning and growing every single day, well, you're probably in the wrong line of business, especially when it comes to taking care of our veterans.
Yeah. And so, speaking for myself, this is a true labor of love, and, you know, it's just, it's an amazing position helping our fellow veterans, and I'm sure you're experiencing that as well.
Absolutely. Josh, looking forward to seeing you in Mankato. I hope you have a great rest of the day, and I appreciate you joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug.
That was Josh Benega, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. All right, Josh, that's it. Right on time, 4:30.
Yeah, and my alarm didn't even shriek like it did last time. I figured out the settings.
It's almost as if you've done this. We're just about out of time, and I'd like to let you know that this show is for you. If you have topic suggestions, if you have show feedback, or if you're a Minnesota veteran and you'd like to share your story, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Click on Contact Us to send us a message. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Jim Rand, Christy Rollwagon, Major Matt Scholes, Josh Benega, Commissioner Brad Lindsay of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week when we'll hear about the Minnesota National Guard Youth Camp and learn about the Marine Corps League. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'd like to give a special shout-out to Lieutenant Lindsay Williams. Say thanks for all your support on Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Doug Wortham, and I'd like to thank you for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a great week and find a way to make a positive impact on someone's life.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.